Welcome to Portal to Ascension. Here with Grant Cameron. And Grant, I have to say, is going to be one of the stars of the upcoming Portal to Ascension. It's happening in Irvine, California, October 5th, 6th, and 7th. Along with Grant, there'll be Robert Schock, an expert in ancient civilizations, Jason Quitt, Serena Taylor, Ray Hernandez, who's really one of the leaders of the free movement started by Edgar Mitchell, Paula Harris, people know, Teresa Yanaris. It's going to be not just a focus on UFOs, it's going to be more focused, I feel, on the qualities of becoming the new human being, the qualities of how do we move into an ascension consciousness. And of course, understanding our situation with extraterrestrials is a big part of how we move forward as a human civilization. And that is why I am talking today to Grant Cameron, who's really, I feel, one of the leaders, who's become one of the leading researchers in this field of understanding the interactions of human civilization with what we want to call this. I mean, you know, there's this thing, Grant, called the extraterrestrial hypothesis, where we've labeled what we call this unknown factor extraterrestrials. But now, and it's been around for a long time, starting with Jacques Vallée, he says, are we really talking about extraterrestrials, or are we talking about something we can't name? I mean, are we just giving it a label so we can handle it, and it might not be anything like that? What's your comment about that?
I think more people are making the move to that idea as well. I mean, I used to think Vallée was kind of off his rocker with this kind of stuff, and I think I would agree with him now. I mean, it's almost maybe what John Alexander calls it, a conscious sentient phenomena, that you're really not too sure what we're really dealing with. And when you look at some of the latest research that I've sort of been looking at, you start to wonder, is it just all messaging? Are we really dealing with somebody here is just visiting? And I'll just give you an example, like the metals. I mean, now you hear all this story about the metals, you know, all these different pieces of metal. As much as I can access in what I have seen, there are no two pieces of metal that are the same. And so that leads to the question, does this have anything to do with what we're looking at all? Do they come across the galaxy and then crash and break into 1,000 little pieces where someone grabs a little piece? You almost start to think, I came up with this new theory, I don't know if you've heard about it, because everybody's using acronyms, so I got the TTOW, the theory of the theory of WOW, that maybe what they're just doing, whatever this conscious phenomenon is just they want us to go WOW, and that the metal material might actually just be a grade 6 project on Zeta Reticuli. And they said, we need to awaken these people, we need them to think. So what we're going to drop a piece of metal. What do you think we should drop? And some kid says, let's take a piece of metal and let's change the isotopes and let's drop it on there. And that'll make them think. Because if you start to look, especially with the ones where Jacques Vallée is looking at the metal that has the extruded metal. Yeah. And you're familiar with these stories over the years.
Yeah, right. Right, right.
Yeah, yes. Where, you know, like 1947 is the first piece where, you know, the UFO is like it pretends it's, you know, it's going to crash. It's like the bird with the broken wing that tries to get you away from the nest is trying to get your attention. It's going, look at, I'm going to crash. And this UFO and the person's watching and this thing looks like it's going to crash. And all of a sudden the UFO stabilizes and it shoots this metal out and flies away. And that's happened over and over again through history. So the question is, was it really in trouble or did it just want to get people's attention and give the metal? So in the past, people would take the metal and people would say, oh, it's slag, the guy's making the story up, all this sort of stuff. But now we have the material, we have the expertise to look at this material, and we realize it's got these bizarre isotopes, that it is this metamaterial that can't be made on Earth. And yet when you look at all the pieces, they're basically all different, which indicates that maybe it's just some sort of program. Almost like I talk about with this theory of WOW, if you go back to the whole thing about John Lennon sees this craft very, very close up. He makes it public, the whole world knows, and it's got these light bulbs, white light bulbs going click, 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 and they're going off and on. And so my question is, do you need light bulbs on a spacecraft to go through interstellar space? Why do they have lights on a craft? They have lights so you can see them. And maybe that's the grade one project. So the grade one project is the lights. The grade six project is the metals. The grade seven project is the mutilations. Now you have these bizarre things with mutilated cats. And there's these stories now. Well, why would they be cutting these cats in half and taking the blood out? And so you say, well, do they come across the galaxy to cut cats in half? And you say, well, these are our lovely cats. We love these cats. You know, why would they do this? And then you start to look, and I actually did some research. There are 4,000 cats a day in the United States of America that are euthanized in shelters. That's 1.3 million cats a year. So maybe the message is simply like the economy, like the ecology. Maybe the message is quit killing cats. I mean, so you start looking at these things in a different light if you look at it as messaging. Like, why would you take, if you're looking at, say, for the idea is like we're using mutilations for genetics. So you take Snippy the horse, which half the horse is gone in 1967. Do you need half a horse to do genetics? We know with the To the Stars that they get the they're doing this DNA sample thing with people. They just take one little vial of blood. So if they can do it with one little vial of blood, why would extraterrestrials need a whole section of a cow? And then why would you drop the cow in the front yard? Why would you not just take the cow with you? Why would you not just take the cat with you? It's almost like it's messaging.
Well, I have a lot of there are answers to that. I mean, first of all, there are UFOs that seem to have crashed, unless they were purposely put down in Roswell and Aztec and
agreed.
And the other thing is, and this is going with the extraterrestrial hypothesis, let's just say there might be some truth to it. So there's a story you're telling, like, okay, they're just kind of wanting to wake us up here because, like what Matt says, UFOs are an outreach project from the universe for the consciously impaired. That's us, you know.
Yeah.
So that was John and Matt's term for what was going on. But maybe, and this was my theory about the mutilated cows, I don't know if they're cats, but they needed those soft tissue and blood supply in order to incubate a hybrid population that wouldn't be birthed, but needed the organic material in order to develop in a kind of artificial womb.
But we have, Alan, we have technology to do that. That was discovered in a dream. That was won the Nobel Prize of duplicating DNA. All you need is one little sample of DNA, and you can duplicate it and duplicate it and duplicate it and duplicate it. And even if you were to take like 100, say 1,000 pounds of horse that you're going to use for whatever you're going to use, do you really need 1,000 pounds? And you get this situation where it seems like a little bit of overkill. And then why do you drop the animal? Why do you not just take the animal? Why do you do this thing like, for example, outside the NORAD headquarters?
I'm just trying to come up with some sort of logical answer for perhaps why. But it's like what I say. It's like your dog looking at you on the computer. Does your dog really know anything that you are doing on your computer? I think that's the kind of intellectual gap we may have with these ETs, where we think we know, we could try to make guesses and assume,
okay,
but we might not have any idea.
Okay, but it's all speculation. What I'm saying is that the speculation that it's genes, that it's getting DNA material, is not as explainable as the idea that that's not what they're doing. If you take a look at the DNA explanation, that's a theory, yes. But the more you look at it, the more it goes like, no, I don't think that's what they're doing. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. So that when I look at this whole program, there's a bunch of stuff that they're doing, like the lights or the messages. It's just this constant thing that, you know, do they actually come here to steal our gold? Do they come here to rape our women? Or is it something higher up than that? Is their consciousness evolved to the point where they're going to do what we think we would do if we went to another planet?
Well, so what is the right path? I mean, what is the path of awakening? We can keep guessing and hypothesizing, which is fine, or you can just say maybe this is what's going on. I mean, I don't know. Where does this leave us? Because there's three issues that we should cover. There's downloads and belong. I think those three topics need to be surveyed. You know what I'm saying? So the downloads, let's start there.
Okay, the downloads is the key. You've got to talk to the experiencers. If you take Lights in the Sky, you can analyze it. We can take the videos that TSSA released, all this kind of stuff. The farthest you can get is where they are right now. You look at it and you say, yeah, this looks pretty weird. And it looks like it ain't from around here. That's it. That's as far as you can go. So, yes, you get the reality that this is not from this earth. The same thing with the metals. You could take all these metals, bismuth, magnesium piece, the layered piece. You can look at it all you want, and then you're going to look at it and you're going to go, this ain't from around here. But it still doesn't explain anything. It just says that this is not from on Earth. It doesn't give you the answers. It's not until you talk to the experiencers. And that's where Ray Hernandez, who's going to be at the Ascension Conference, has just written the book, this book, Beyond UFOs, which I say is the most important book ever written in ufology. Because it gets beyond the UFO sightings. It gets beyond the whole idea of metals that we need, you know, we need some sort of toy. We need something to touch. We need something to... a lot of times I think the way we've done in ufology is that we're like a rich Western society and basically it's entertainment for people. Like we're just interested, like where are they from and this sort of stuff. And it's almost like in the 19th century when they would use mediums, they'd get a seance going and you had nothing to do. So let's bring the medium in and let's talk to some dead people or whatever. And it's that kind of thing. If you really want the message, you have to leave the sightings behind. You have to leave the metal behind. And you've got to go to what are the experiencers saying. That's why the Beyond UFO book goes to the consciousness thing, what the message is coming from these people. Because there's over 3,000 experiencers who have answered all these questions. And there are patterns that tell us what's going on.
But can we trust the messages? You know, so let's say we get this high utopian vision from these ETs. And that's sort of been going on, I think, for a long time. You know, we're here to help you, and meanwhile we're in a bigger mess than ever. And is it real? Can we trust the messages? And I think the downloads are real, but is the source on our side, or are they just kind of feeding us baby food?
Okay, but the question is, what else are you going to do? What is, if you take the 3,000 experiences and throw them out and say it's anecdotal evidence, we're not going to listen to it, all you're going to do is take more anecdotal evidence.
I'm not saying that. And can we, what evidence do we have that we can believe? I believe it's not anecdotal. I believe they are getting messages. How do we know that we can trust what's coming through from the ETs, not from the experiencers? I mean, how do you know?
Well, it's always going to, that's always the thing. It's all belief. Like people, I had a second download, which I don't want to really get into, but part of the download says, is it knowing or is it believing? And what the scientific community will do to experiencers, to you and I, is they'll say, I know you just believe. You believe you saw a UFO. You believe you got a message. It's all belief. Doesn't matter whether it's coming from the scientist or whatever. Even, you know, if you take a look at the research done at IONS, Radin says we don't even know what an electron is. We don't even know what a proton is, and this sort of thing. It's all belief. It's all sort of, we're anecdotal. We're trying to put it together. And so if you've got 3,000 experiencers, whether you give them lie detector tests, whatever you do, that's the best material you've got, because you've got so much material. Otherwise, you're going to go back to, you know, 15 sighting reports. And what I'm saying is, the sighting reports really doesn't matter if they're true, no matter what, it's only gets you so far. The same with the metal. It's, you've got to go to, and that's all we have is the experiencer stuff or the messages they're getting.
But besides that, I think it's not just the messages they're getting, because I do believe these are a real message. It could be that we have to shift our consciousness, and this may be what the ETs want us to do, shift, if there are ETs, shift our consciousness so we can open and all become antennas for a greater human civilization here. Maybe that's the real message of the download, how we open the facilities of our capacity to telepathically know something.
Yeah, and that's where I say, when you start looking at experiencers, channelers, all these different people, the analogy I've come up with is one with Bashar. So Bashar says there is only light, there is no darkness. darkness is not a thing unto itself. Darkness is just the absence of light. So it's all light, it's all knowledge. And because we're so far away from the light, it's very dark. We really don't know what's going on. And from time to time, so we're on the bottom of an ocean. That's the analogy I use. We're on the bottom of the ocean. It's very dark. From time to time, you'll get an experiencer who has an experience who's able to float up into the water where you can see more. Or you can take a channeler, or even a better, a trance channeler can get higher up into the water. And the higher they get up, the more they can see, and they bring that information. So you have to analyze the information. You got to compare it. Are they telling the same sort of stories? But it's all going to be belief systems, and it's all this thing of who do you believe, where do you get your information from? And when you've got 3,000 people, I say that's a very good amount, rather than some guy who says, I don't believe them because it's anecdotal evidence. You got to realize he still believes as well.
I don't think it's a waste of time to talk to people who say, I don't believe that. We have to take the evidence or the downloads that we have and see what we can do with it. About the idea of people floating up to the surface, I talked to Anita Morjani, who had probably the most dramatic near-death experience. She actually died, and I said in that state, when I interviewed her, did you see anything else like ET related or other world? And she said she did, was aware of these other beings, but she couldn't look around long enough. She was like, there, the lights flashed on, the lights flashed off, and she was back. But I was open to the fact that there are other consciousnesses out there. And I thought that was a bit of a validation for our side, you know.
I wrote a book called Inspired, The Paranormal World of Creativity, where I look at all these things, like near-death experience, people doing psychedelics, people with brain damage, stuff like this, people who are able to float up into the higher water. Almost like Bashar says, we come into you in your dreams, because now you're in our world. And the same with a dream, you're moving higher into the water, into where there's more light, where you can see more. And that's the thing. You look at all these different people on this idea of inspiration, people who aren't in this sort of analytical left brain world, who are able to dissociate and move up, almost like Eben Alexander talks about. He's given some lectures lately. And he talks about, and he says, his belief is, I always said left brain. And what he says is it's the neural cortex. It's the new brain, the one with the ego, with the analytical abilities. And he says it's putting the neural cortex to sleep, and that's what allows you to tap into that field. So it's the same idea, whether you're talking to a channeler or it's the same thing. Some are better than others. So you have to determine, is this a good channeler or is it a bad channeler?
The same thing. I've been teaching remote viewing to people because I had a quick lesson with Russell Targ and I got the target. And the thing that he said that made me understand what was really bad is shutting off the noise from the signal. You have to shut off the noise of the mind and your expectations about what you might hear and just tap, let it come to you. He said, expect what you, be open to what you don't expect in this remote viewing process. And this is what I tell people, and I've had incredible results with people. 90% of the audience gets the target when we do it this way. When I say, just let it come to you, don't think, shut off the monkey mind, as they say, shut off your expectations, shut off the noise of what your expectations are. And this is what I think we're going to have to do as a race of human beings if we're going to evolve. So maybe the experiences are leading away.
That's listening to, because that's what I've done. I've listened to the experiences, the near-death people, the mystics, the channelers, all these sort of people. And that's what I've learned, is this idea that you've got to shut down the left brain. I sort of thought I discovered something. I'm going, holy cow, I figured this out. And so I contacted, you talked to Russell Targ, I contacted Hal Puthoff. I said, Hal, did you ever look at the right brain, left brain thing? Did you shut down the left brain? And all he wrote back, you know, hell, very short. He writes back and he says, read chapter 6. And it's in his book. They knew this in the 1970s already.
Well, that whole TED talk with Jill Bolte Taylor, where she lost her left brain and she was pure right brain. You've seen that. And she says, I was one with the cosmos. I was the infinite. And this is who that's who we are. When we choose not to listen to our left brain, but we need a balance. You know, the left brain is the steering wheel. Like Einstein said, logic will get you to A, from A to B, but the right brain will get you everywhere else, you know? So we need the logic, and we need to dispense with that logic if we're really going to tap into the creative power of who we are. In your research with these experiencers, is there a consistency to the messages that are coming?
Absolutely. It's the same messages. It's when I wrote the book Inspired, it's the same messages that come from people having near-death experiences, almost like the thing with the DMT. When they did the DMT in the 1990s, Strassman did the DMT experiments, and then suddenly he kept secret for a number of years the fact that over almost half of them had had encounters with beings, including beings where they were like being abducted, you know, this on the ship type thing. And then he'd go to the people and go, were you abducted by aliens? And they go, no, I don't think so. And that's this whole thing, is when you start looking across the spectrum of people who are able to dissociate, you get the same pattern. And that's where I'm very optimistic. I think we actually start to understand this whole concept of right-left brain, which we didn't have before. We understand the concept that you can tap into something, this idea that the information is all out there. It's the ability, it's not the talent, it's the ability to cut your ego off and move into that field. So we understand a lot of stuff. I don't think you and I aren't arguing about this kind of stuff. And that's the message you got to get across to the world, is that you think that the ego mind is the one that's running the thing. And no, it's vast majority of discoveries like this one with the DNA. The duplication of DNA came in a download. This whole idea that won the Nobel Prize. And you see a lot of inventions and stuff, and we don't realize that to get the answers, that's where the answers are. That they aren't there by looking at metal, by looking at UFO sightings, and that sort of stuff. We have started to understand this consciousness thing, whatever this is outside of us, and that you can tap into.
I think there seems to be a slow movement towards that on many fronts. Density within the scientific community, you know, like Thomas Kuhn implied, revolutions in scientific thinking. I don't know if he said this, but it happens one funeral at a time, right? So what do we need to do as an emerging population to make this shift more pervasive? What would you say?
Well, what I would say is the idea that science advances one funeral at a time. Yeah. And there's nothing you can do. I was actually offered, they're going to do a TV show. I don't know if they offered you. They want to do a TV show called Prove It. So they're going to put the UFO people, and then they're going to put the skeptics or whatever. And it's going to be like a game show thing where people are fighting and whatever. It's great entertainment. This doesn't get us anywhere. All I believe is that if you and I have, I was always motivated by two expressions in my life. I was raised to be a minister, to be, you know, very religious, whatever. And I was motivated by two things. One was in the Bible, it says, too much is given, much is expected. And Edgar Cayce, the great trans-channeler, said, knowledge not used is sin. And I was always motivated by those two expressions. And so to me,
what did Edgar Cayce say? I'm sorry, I missed that last part. He said,
knowledge not used is sin. So if you don't know anything, say when you die, they're going to cut your brain because you're an idiot. You didn't know anything. But you and I knew what was going on. And therefore, the onus is on us. And so it really doesn't matter. I don't think you can really change. People are waiting for disclosure. It's like, oh, when disclosure comes, then I'll get off my, you know what, and I'll do something. And so when they die, they'll say, well, you know, I would have done something, but I didn't get disclosure. And that Hillary Clinton, she was terrible. I mean, if Hillary Clinton hadn't been around and destroyed the emails, I would have done something. And it's all this outside, believing that you're externally motivated. And that's one of the part of the download I got. Is the world internally motivated or externally? And majority of people are externally motivated. They think that there's things outside of us that change us, that are going to change things. And no, it comes from within. So what I say is all you and I can do, Ellen, is you have the information, I have the information. And if it's a reincarnation world, which is the other part of the download I got, if it's a one life, it's one world. If it's multiple lives, everything in ufology changes. Everything. Everything changes. And you look
What changes? I don't understand. What changes with reincarnation?
The whole deal that you say, well, we was abducted. There's no abductions. If reincarnation is a fact and you came into this world, then you're into soul contract. Then you're not into good or evil. It's not like good things, bad things. Then everything is experience. Everything sort of, you got to look at everything through a new lens. And so what I would say is that you and I have come in here, if you believe it's multiple lives, we came in here, we made an agreement to do something. All you can really do is be internally motivated. You can't worry about everybody else. You came in here to do something. All we got to do is figure out, why did you and I come here? What are we supposed to be doing? And are we doing it? And forget about the rest of it. Because what we're trying to do in a lot of our UFO thing is we're trying to convince other people rather than doing what we're supposed to do. If you have the message, tell the message.
Well, this is why I think it's so important, this upcoming conference, the Portal to Ascension conference, because I think these are the kind of discussions that are more valuable than people reporting about the nuts and bolts and hardware left behind. I think if we could gather an audience that will talk about the shift in consciousness, that will spread through the population in a way that will start to open them up to downloads. This is what I hope. So if people want to come, they should go to Irvine, California, October 5th, 6th, and 7th, and you can register at ascensionconference.com. Continue this conversation, be a part of the conversation, because everyone has a piece of this consciousness, a unique piece. And I think your insights, because you've now done the research, you've done the hard work, and you know, to go from where you came from as a kind of nuts and bolts kind of guy and saying, what does consciousness have to do? And now this shift saying consciousness has everything to do with this.
Yeah.
Right?
And everybody in the audience at the consciousness conference has to realize that they came here to do something. So if a lot of times they're having experience, so the first question I ask the experiencer is, do you think you got a mission? And they all go,
right.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I don't know what it is, but yeah, I think I'm supposed to do something. And we've even got, you never know what one person can do. And this is a story we haven't really got into. You may hear more about it.
Even style, old time spirituality, right? I mean, this is what I get as a download.
Yeah, I mean, you and I mean, the way I look at it, because you know, I'm a big Newton guy, Michael Newton, 7,000 regressions, life between life, the whole life between life theory.
I don't know who he is.
He's a clinical psychologist, and what he did is he regresses people to the past life, lets them die, takes them into the spirit world, and wrote the famous book called Journey of Souls about what happens between lives. The idea that you plan your life and you know where you're going to go, and in that world, these 7,000 people all describe the same thing. So they're describing situations where you and I, people have meetings, and you're in soul groups. So you and I firmly believe this is probably true. You and I may have had a meeting before we were born, you and I and a bunch of other people, and we said, okay, we're going into the world. We're volunteering to go into this world because it's at the crossroads of an evolving consciousness, and we have to get them over this thing. Right. And you and I make an agreement. We're going to go in there. It's not a very good place. We're going to, you know, be ridiculed and whatever, and we make this agreement to come in. And that's so I look at that thing. And so I look at, what am I here? I'm always thinking, like, what am I supposed to be doing? Or in the whole thing with reincarnation. So if the whole disclosure thing isn't going very well, then you got to sort of take some responsibility for it and say, well, why would I choose to come in at this time? I would rather come in just before disclosure takes place. We came at this time when it was bad because that's when we chose to come in to move it. We don't, you know, it's fine to come in when we finally get disclosure or the free energy or whatever we're looking for at the end. It's always going to be a role. What are we here to do?
Right.
Well, it would show, number one, the main thing it's going to show, if portals are real, there's a big problem with nuts and bolts. And you got to remember, like 95% of the world is still on the nuts and bolts. They actually firmly believe it's a solid physical world. It's all made out of little nuts and bolts. And it's just little particles. And there's nothing in behind it. So if you can go, like Sixto Paz, the story told in Peru, he goes into this Zendra, which is like a quarter of an inch thick. It's about 15 feet high. There's six witnesses. They watch him walk into this Zendra. He disappears into the Zendra. The Zendra, the UFOs are above. The Zendra disappears. 9 hours later, the Zendra reopens. And he had been on the planet Ganymede. And he had a five-day growth of beard. So if it's true that you can walk into a portal or a Zendra or whatever and be on another planet, the whole nuts and bolts thing is in big trouble. And that's where I say that it's so important, because it really sort of shows that we got something wrong. We've got time wrong. We've got space wrong. And now you got like the Eric Davis, the papers that helped put off these 37 papers, this whole thing about the papers where They're talking about the wormholes and all this sort of stuff. And you've got mathematical stuff. In fact,
what? You have the papers?
It's because, I don't know if you heard, there's a recent interview by Jan Hartson. And Jan Hartson talks about the fact, he had the experience, he has this experience when he's like 9 years old, and this thing's 30 feet away in the backyard, him and his brother see this flying saucer, and it's, it's orange with green, with blue, dryer hose coming off the bottom. And there again, this is messaging. Is it really an orange flying saucer with suction cups on it and stuff like that, that these nine-year-old kids, they want him to see it's a nine-year-old kid, and they make this sort of thing. And then he goes to Ben Rich. And Ben Rich, in 1993, he graduates engineering, electrical engineering at UCLA, and he's there with the other engineers. And that's what Ben Rich says: we now have the technology to take ET home. We've discovered the mistake in the equation. And Jan Hartson says that, he goes to him and he says, what equation are you talking about? What's this about? What have we discovered? What have you discovered? And he doesn't really want to answer. And he said, well, how did they get here? And that's when he says, what do you know about ESP? And Jan Hartson says, it means everything in time and space is connected. That's the oneness principle. And Ben says, that's how it works. The same as Tom DeLonge was told. It's the consciousness. And that's where Eric Walker said was consciousness. So anyway, he said that one of the few people that came to him after he made that announcement of what Ben Rich had told him about the mathematics, Hal Puthoff phoned him up. And Hal Puthoff said, what did he tell you? And Hal Puthoff was getting him to tell the story. And Hal Puthoff was very interested. What did Ben Rich actually tell you? And he said that Hal Puthoff told him, I guess that just recently, Hal Puthoff says, we now have the mathematics. We understand how it works. We understand how these things fly around based upon the Nimitz videos and stuff. We have the mathematics. And that's the whole thing. They've discovered now the mistake in the equation. So the whole thing is that you've developed this thing and it is for real. And it's the idea that the time is not what you think it is. Space is not what you think it is. And the aliens, the ETs, they actually just understand that. So I think in this sense, we've moved a long way where you guys like Hal Puthoff are sort of now coming out because it's sort of been opened up. He can talk about it, what his involvement was. And yet you take a look at Eric Davis saying that they shut down the crash saucer program in 1989, that we did not discover anything. We could not back engineer a single thing, and they shut the whole program down. And it has not been revived yet.
I don't know if I believe that, because what's Robert Bigelow doing then? Obviously he has...
Exactly. What is Robert Bigelow doing? Eric Davis would be getting his stuff from Hal Puthoff. Hal Puthoff has one of the longest held top secret SCI clearances in the country. Why is Hal Puthoff and Eric Davis working on some little anti-gravity thing? If we've got spaceships that are flying to different stars and anti-gravity ships and we've got all this, why are they wasting their time working with Tom DeLonge to build this anti-gravity? Bob Bigelow has got $1 billion. Bob Bigelow said he has lots of contacts inside government and inside intelligence. If we had the technology, why is Bob Bigelow wasting his time sending rockets to Mars? Why is Elon Musk wasting his time sending rockets to Mars? Why is...
We have these ships that go to Mars. Who's claiming that besides, some of the fringe people in this movement? No one I know is claiming there's been ships going to Mars or other planets or out there.
Oh, the secret space program. There's pilots of people believe in the secret space program. We've got these...
But there's no proof about that. I've seen very...
I agree, but I would say that there's a high percentage of people who believe the secret space program. Linda believes the secret space program, that they've got this. The whistleblowers. There's lots of people that do. And what I say is...
I like Linda. But I don't know anyone who I would trust who said they've been to Mars and back. I just don't.
Well, I would agree with you. But what I'm saying is that it appears, because Bob Bigelow is working on this little anti-gravity, trying to get a thing to rise a couple feet off the ground, or Firmage. Firmage is rumored to have spent $100 million, and he's just trying to levitate this little object off the ground. We have nothing. Do we we do not understand anything of what they're doing. It is way beyond everything. We're still working on the basic anti-gravity thing, and all this other stuff to me is disinformation that's been thrown in there. So we are a long way away, and that would be one of the reasons why you're not going to get disclosure, because they don't have any answers. Everybody thinks, oh, the president doesn't know the black ops, David Rockefeller is still running the thing in his grave. And so, I mean, I think that they don't have anything. The more I look at it, I'm working on this research. Because one of the things I looked at, you take a look at now, you have these high-level guys. You got Jim Semivan, you got Kit Green, all these people. I got these papers. I don't know if I talked to you about this. I got these papers that were leaked to me. A guy was going to write a manuscript. This is an eyes-only study that was done for President Lyndon Johnson in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. I got 100 of the 300 pages of the manuscript. On that committee, there was 8 people doing the investigation for the president. What are UFOs all about? What's going on? And they had, DeLong has Robert Weiss, head of Lockheed Skunk Works. They had Kelly Johnson on this 1960 committee. So the head of Lockheed Skunk Works was on this investigation for the president with what's with UFOs. The other guy was on there with Arthur Lundahl. Arthur Lundahl ran the Weird Desk before Kit Green, before Ron Pandolfi. He was the original guy. You had the head of the NR, the National Reconnaissance Organization, on this committee of 8 people. And in the end, you had these top people, and they said, we have no idea what's going on. UFOs exist. Yes, we have no idea what's going on. We have no technology.
How can you believe that? They say that publicly we have no idea, but...
This is an eyes-only study for the president. This is not public. This is documents I got on a manuscript that's being written. Mm-hmm. And the thing was, you can say, oh, they made it up. They couldn't have made up this whole thing because you would not have put Arthur Lundahl. Only I and about 5 people know who Arthur Lundahl is, and that Arthur Lundahl would be on a top secret play if it was a real panel, and Kelly Johnson. Most people would not put Kelly Johnson on there. Well, they're all different. That's my point, is they're all different. Every single piece of metal is different. Now, what they're saying, based upon what happened at Rendlesham Forest, is this thing with the terahertz. And if you see the Rogan interview with Tom DeLong, he talks about this experiment that they're going to run. Now, if they run this experiment, which they may do, this is with the art parts piece, with the bismuth magnesium layered piece. And what Tom was talking about in the Rogan interview is they bombard it with terahertz energy. And the problem with it, Linda talked about, is we can't hit it with enough energy. And that if you hit it with enough energy, according to Tom DeLong, the space, the amount of time that it takes to go across the top of the surface slows down. And this is this Oz effect that people describe when they're near a craft where time seems to slow down and that the thing will start to float. So this may be something where they've realized that when you hit it with terahertz, this piece of metal, that the metal will float. But the thing is that the terahertz thing was discovered through the Project Condyne report that came out of Great Britain. And this is where Burroughs got his disability thing. And they discovered that Burroughs, the injury that he got, which was confirmed by Kit Green, was caused by this terahertz. So they know terahertz, this very high energy, is part of the UFO thing that is being given off by this craft. Now, whether they know...
That may have been why they modified Bigelow's warehouse to protect people from the terahertz when they bombarded the metal that he obviously does have with these terahertz. So I'm just guessing. I have no idea.
Yeah, it may be. We can always speculate, but I know for a fact that if he's handling top secret material, whether it's documents, whether it's metal... whether it's film, you cannot hold it in an ordinary facility. You need these very high secure areas and skiffs and the white noise and all the security.
It could also be because they're using terahertz frequencies that can be damaging and needed to protect people from those effects.
But you got to remember, if it's hell put off in guys like that, they have access, like you've seen the reports, where hell put out the 37 reports to all these different, like Lockheed and Eric Davis did a couple, to all these different labs. They have access to all the labs. You're going to have all these national labs who have all this type of material. Hell will know where to go to do an experiment on terahertz or metals or whatever. They have, and that's why they're saying that they now have the technology, because they've got these access points where if you send in a piece of metal, what they do is they take insurance. So you got your little piece of metal, They give you an insurance policy for $1 million, and they take it and they just use the head of a pin. It's almost like nothing of the metal at all, and they can do the analysis and give you the piece of metal back. So people are starting to hand this material in from around here and maybe from around the world, and that's what they're sort of putting together. But that's pretty basic, you know, gathering pieces of metal and analyzing them and stuff like that. And with the one that Hal talked about in 2015, he talked about this whole thing where the isotopes were all messed up, totally messed up, and just proved that, no, this wasn't from this planet. But because the isotopes are all messed up, it says it's not from this planet, it's a metamaterial, but it doesn't tell you how the craft gets here. It doesn't tell you how do they open a portal. That's why I'm saying we're only beginning on this thing. From what I can see, from what Hal put off is, and I've watched the top, because that was my thing. When I had my UFO sighting, I know it was for real. So all I was interested in is what is going on. Somebody must know. So when I watched Hal put off for 20 years, same probably as you, because you realize this guy, he's got a clearance. He knows what's going on. He may not be talking, but you watch exactly what he says. Same with Bigelow. Same with Jacques Vallée. Same with all these guys. And when I see what they're doing, it looks like they really haven't gotten very far. They are realizing, yes, this is for real, that we've got the medals and stuff, but we got a long way to go. Whereas some people are saying, oh, no, we figured this out, you know, 1954, we got anti-gravity, we've been flying these ships around, we're shooting crafts down, and all this kind of stuff. So it's to get that validation. And the people you can only watch, to me, are guys that Hal Puthoff, and I think you would agree, Hal Puthoff would not lie. Hal Puthoff's an honest scientist who's trying to figure it out. He's 80-some years old. He's trying to figure out what's going on. And I would trust Hal.
When I interviewed Hal, Hal was very upfront with me, and he said, well, he didn't say it outright, but he said, we might have some ships out there that seem to bend face as they move through it, you know? And so Hal's a really good guy, I think. Yeah. I mean,
and I think all of them, I think they're... Yeah, and that's where I differ from what the disclosure thing has done now, is that they put the two of the stars, like this is something new. And they said, Bill Moore and all those guys, they were all a bunch of crooks. Oh, they were just scamming people, Richard Doty. And when you listen to Eric Davis, they asked Eric Davis, what do you think of Richard Doty? And he goes, oh, he's a good guy. I had a meeting with him. He's won a lot of awards. That's true. Like Richard Doty had the same job as Lou Elizondo. What I say is the same thing. There are no good guys and bad guys. What we're doing, we're saying.
Wasn't there that case where Richard Doty was the guy who someone suspected ETs, and there was someone who saw them, and he was a guy that he sort of drove crazy because he thought it was ETs. I mean, isn't that something Doty was? Yeah,
Well, that's the Benowitz. That's the Benowitz thing. And what was Benowitz reporting? Benowitz was reporting UFOs over the Manzano weapons storage area, the biggest repository for nuclear weapons in the world. You can't let that guy. So a counterintelligence agent is going to go in there and make him think something else. But he's doing the same thing as Lou Elizondo. Lou Elizondo is a counterintelligence agent. He's not an he's a counterintelligence agent. Same as Richard Doty. And what I would say is, whatever they're doing, it's the oneness principle. There are no good people. There are no bad people. There are just people doing their job. Lou Elizondo's doing his job from what he was told to do above him. And Richard Doty was doing what he was told. He was just doing his job.
Are you saying that Luis Elizondo is still working counterintelligence as he becomes part of To the Stars organization? Is that what you're saying?
No, he was a counterintelligence agent. People call him an intelligent. He worked in counterintelligence.
And same now, Richard Doty.
That was his job.
Is he counterintelligence or is he intelligence?
Well, you never know. He's still got a security clearance. You can't really tell. Is he still? Because the big catch with To the Stars that I think everybody's missed is, how did they get the films out? How did they get this stuff out? And if you talk to them, then they say, he asked Lou Elizondo, and he said, I didn't release them. To the Stars did not release the videos. It was released by the government. And then they asked him, who in the government released it? That's the critical point. Who in the government has green-lighted this release? It's not To the Stars.
What does his answer to that?
You have to ask
that question. What does Elizondo say when people say...
He said, you have to ask that question to the government. Wow. So you're at the dead end. That's the dead end, is who in the government. And that's what I've said all along. They've been green lighting this disclosure thing for 70 years. They've been doing it over and over again. And we think it's different what's happened now. It's the same thing. They're just a little bit better at what they're doing. It's like, as I pointed out, the whole thing with the now that we're admitting the Eric Davis is indicating that the Del Rio crash is real. The Roswell, that was all in the MJ-12 document. The MJ-12 thing, I absolutely believe, is actually real. It may not be a legitimate document. They've changed the document, but they're doing this gradual disclosure, and they've always done it. And they're just ordinary people. They're people inside the government who want it out.
But let me just ask you this, because when Alessandro says you have to ask the government who released that footage, that seems like an obvious lie. Obviously, he knows who he talked to.
But what he says, and he's done it a number of times, I can't speak on behalf of the government. You have to ask them. I can only speak on behalf of myself. So a lot of times he'll divert and say, like Congress, they ask him about Congress. And he said, well, you have to ask Congress. Like he doesn't go and say, like they say, who in Congress is actually working on this thing? He said, well, you'd have to ask Congress. He doesn't want to step over his bounds. And
is
leak.
That because he's sworn to like a secret oath by CIA? Because
it's part of whatever the process is that he can't go there. He can go so far, but then he can't out people.
But if Alessandro or someone in that organization could identify who in the government released those UFO videos of the Nemitz, who would you say that person was? Just as a guess, because you're.
I always say it's a major program that has gone on for 70 years. That it may have been Brennan. I'm not sure whether it's Brennan or the guy who briefed. He did a video. The guy who briefed Barack Obama on his national security briefing when he was president-elect when he first came in. He said he calls it the wake-up call. I don't know if I told you this story. He said I give the president the wake-up call. You go into the president. You say, okay, Mr. President. Here's what we're doing. We're doing this. We're doing this. We're doing this. And these are done not because any specific president asked for them to be done. This is done on behalf of the office of the president. So it goes through, and he said, we're doing this, and it's like we're killing this, we're overthrowing this, we're doing this, all the black ops stuff. And the president's going, oh, my God, what, you know. And then he says, the wake-up call. He says, and Mr. President, when you put your hand on the Bible at 12 noon, on January the 21st, he said, unless you tell us to stop, we're still going to be doing this and this and this and this. And I believe the UFO program is one of those programs that has been running through all these different administrations. And when I wrote the book Managing Magic, I went through all these different administrations and showed they leaked this, they leaked this, they leaked this. And I believe it has to come from the president. For example, in the if you take a look at this recent story with Brennan, so Trump pulls Brennan's security clearance. Okay, so Brennan is a key guy. John Brennan was part of the Rockefeller Initiative. And I did a little thing where I talked about this connection. He was part. He was the guy that when Greer went to Woesley in the Rockefeller Initiative, Woesley set out an investigation of UFOs inside the CIA. And it came out in a white paper in 1997. It was released. There was a classified, apparently a version, and a non-classified version. In that thing, it was John Brennan who was giving the answers on what has the CIA been doing in the 1980s and 1990s. There's a reference and a footnote as John Brennan. So John Brennan was there. So you take a look at John Brennan when he was CIA director for the last 4 years with Obama. He's the guy that put on the front page. So the CIA says, we're not into UFOs. We haven't been in since 1951. We're not interested. And suddenly, in the middle of the Barack Obama administration, they put two articles on the front page of the CIA website on how to investigate a UFO. And it's a straight up piece. There's no laugh or whatever. That to me takes the president. You're not gonna put that on the front page without some sort of green light. I say it's all green lighted from the top down, where the president has to green light. 2 days before Obama leaves, then suddenly you get there's 12 million pages of material put on the internet, and it's remote viewing material, UFO material, stuff like that. And if you remember, John Brennan, the day after Trump was inaugurated, Brennan goes to Florida and he's interviewed by Billy Cox. I don't know if you remember this. Billy Cox does this article. So Billy Cox has Gates on there 2 years before at the same event, Robert Gates, who was CIA director. So Robert Gates says to him, he asks him about UFOs. And Robert Gates says, you know, I had every security clearance in the country, and I absolutely did not see a shred of evidence to prove that any of this is for real. Okay, so that's before they sort of open up. Brennan goes the day after. Remember, he's the CIA director. The day before, he's the CIA director. Now, the day after, he's not the CIA director anymore, and he goes and Billy Cox asks him, what about UFOs? And he gives the teeth to the stars line. He says, well, I've known for a long time that we've been working on this. We've been working on this kind of stuff, and I think we should work on it. There's something to learn. Completely different story. And here he is. He's outside. He's retired. And all the To the Stars people, you take a look, they're all retired people. Lou Elizondo quit. The next day, he joins Tom DeLonge. So you retire. That gives you the ability to sort of talk. And so I believe it's always been a disclosure thing, and it always has to have a green light from the president, because the president is running the show. When he pulled, people will always say, the president doesn't know what's going on. Garbage, the president doesn't know what's going on. The president, you take a look, he pulled John Brennan's security clearance. He was going to pull Comey.
Was there some UFO-related situation is the reason he pulled John Brennan?
No, but the fact is, what people don't realize, because he pulled Brennan's security clearance, and then he's going to pull these other 11 security clearances of these people that worked on the Russian thing, the president can pull every single security clearance in the country. People don't realize security clearances are controlled by the president of the United States. It's not a law. So people say, oh, I've got 15 levels above the president. You do not. The president does not have a security clearance. It is the president who hands out the security clearances. And that's where you see when he pulls John Brennan's security clearance, that shows that the president is running the security. So the president has access to all the secrets.
Do you think that Trump knows about the UFOs?
Absolutely. Sure. He would have to know. For example, when the To the Stars thing broke in the New York Times and the Washington Post and Politico on the same day, which is, you know, is planned. So it breaks. That next day, Sarah Sanders takes a question from The Hill, the newspaper, The Hill. Right. And that's when the guy says, based upon this disclosure thing on the New York Times front page of the New York Times, and it was on Fox. Trump watches Fox all the time. It was on Fox all day long, this whole thing that this had been leaked in the New York Times, front page of the New York Times, biggest selling story for years. And so this guy says, is Mr. Trump interested in UFOs, and is he going to refinance the To the Stars Academy? Or no, the ATIP program. Is he going to refinance the ATIP program? And Sarah Sanders says, well, I haven't really talked to the president about UFOs, but I'll ask him and I'll get back to you. And I knew she wasn't going to get back to him, because you can't. You can't bring the president out and start talking about UFOs, because it just leads to question 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You can't have the president. So she said,
he knows, but he may not care enough to do anything about it.
Yeah, exactly.
The president is so concerned with him.
Sure. I mean, I just did a PowerPoint thing on a book called The President's Book of Secrets. There's a top secret briefing that is given to the president every morning. It's called the President's Daily Briefing. And it's between 2 and 20 pages, and it's all this important stuff. So they say it's based upon what the president wants to know. So if you have, for example, Kennedy, who they said couldn't sit still long enough to get a briefing. He was always running around. He wanted to do this and that. So they made it like a point thing that he could put in his pocket and read the briefing as he's going through his day running around. And when they realized that the president didn't want to know about this, he didn't want to know about that, they would give him all the material, but it was according to the president. So if the president isn't really interested in certain subjects, they're not going to go there. They're going to based upon what the president, because what it is, it's a briefing, and the president writes in the page, and they say that the column of the material, which is very short, like a couple paragraphs per subject, to make it very, very brief so he knows he can read through it. And then what the president says is, I want to know more about this. I want to know about, what about this? I don't believe this, whatever. And they leave this whole section on each page for the president to write. So the president can write in there, I want to know about UFOs. They have no choice but to go and check it. It's called a deep dive. Any subject that he wants, they have to go and check it out.
You think the Space Force is related, this idea about the Space Force, which seems sort of ridiculous?
Well, that would be my impression. That's where I say the fear is in the disclosure thing, that you're going to get a guy like Donald Trump who's going to say, oh, these are bad guys. They're coming into our airspace. They didn't come through the right immigration process. And this is a chance to increase the defense budget. And if you're in the Defense Department, you're going to push this. That's why they're pushing the threat thing. You want your department to be bigger. So you're going to play it. Even though if you don't believe it, you're going to play this whole thing to get your budget up, to move it up. And so Trump, that's the way, in a world of, Trump is a real sort of sort of a local guy in terms of duality. Trump is absolutely, everything is good and bad. There's no doubt about it. You're the worst guy in the world or the best guy in the world. He's absolute duality. So in the world of UFOs, that's the way he's going to see it. You and I would say, as the Russians did, and that's what, if you heard the interview with Hell Put Off with George Knapp. George Knapp said, he got this document, and I actually referenced it in one presentation I did. It was called 73790, which is the Area 51 of the Soviet Union. You know, George Knapp was there in the 1990s doing research. And George Knapp said there was actually a statement, what you and I were talking about before, where the statement is, do not shoot on them, do not shoot at them, leave them alone. And that's when he was he was talking to Lou Elizondo, and Lou Elizondo said, no, I don't agree with that. This is this whole idea. No, I'm the defense department. That's why I call it the Nuremberg defense. We are here to shoot things down. We are here to defend things. And it's not up to Lou Elizondo. It's not up to the defense department. It's up to a belief system. Whatever the belief system, if it's a duality belief system, it's going to come down, and the people in the defense department will shoot even if they don't want to shoot, because that's their job. We're here. We're here to salute, take orders. Even though we don't agree, we're going to do what we're told to do. And that's what Lou Elizondo said. I'm here doing my job. I'm in the defense department.
Human consciousness, don't you think?
Yeah. I think they're higher up. They're closer to the light. They can see more. And they're trying to give us these messages, which agree with the message I got. So that's why I think it's very promising what's coming down. It makes sense when I hear what they're saying.
Well, thank you, Grant. I always appreciate your enthusiasm, and you're really at the cutting edge, and you're one of the superstars because you are so dedicated. There's no doubt that you are going for it, and helping us all understand the big picture. And as you evolve, the whole scope of your research keeps evolving. So I appreciate the part you're playing here. So
beautiful. Thank you for your interest. You're one of the leaders. You're one of the guys I've watched for years. You were doing it before me. So I look up to you. So I'll see you in LA, and let's do the job that we were brought here to do.
Yes. So in LA and Irvine, this is Grant's going to be one of the keynote speakers at the Portal to Ascension Conference. You can get tickets at ascensionconference.com. He'll be there along with Robert Schock, Jason Quid, John D'Souza, Ray Hernandez, Paula Harris, me, I'll be there, Justin Duchamp. But just give us a little preview of what you are going to be talking about there.
I'll probably do a lot of the disclosure stuff, the latest on disclosure. It's a fast developing story, and a little bit of what we're talking about tonight. So we'll elaborate on some of the material we're doing tonight.
Right, and we'll have a chance to meet collectively and kind of get an overview from all over the country of what people are going through and how this unity consciousness is sort of working on a planetary scale. So it's always nice to come together with like-minded thinkers. So. All right.
Yeah. And any experiencers who are there, we'd like to hear their stories.
How can people find you again? Yeah, hear their stories for sure. Because you've been pretty prolific recently on your YouTube channel. What is the website for you?
Well, the YouTube is White House UFO, and the website is actually being rebuilt. It's Beyond Presidential UFO. It used to be presidentialufo.com. It's now beyondpresidentialufo.com.
And it is the most extensive website and research out there between U.S. presidents and the UFO phenomena, because you go through everyone, and it's an important piece of research, historically.
Thank you, sir.
So, thank you, Grant. I look forward to seeing you and catching up with you. You can find me on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/newrealities, my website, newrealities.com. And newrealitiesevents.com for the events I'll be doing. I'll also be at the Global Healing Pyramid Conference in Chicago, September 20th to 23rd. But I'm looking forward to seeing everyone at the Ascension Conference in Irvine, California, October 5th, 6th, and 7th. And you get tickets at ascensionconference.com. And thanks to Neil Gore for putting this on. Neil, you have any closing comments?
October 5th, 6th, and 7th this year, all day. You can't, if you can't attend live, you can actually check out the live stream too. So we're broadcasting it worldwide.